This episode is brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts that you won't find anywhere else, to small-batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade, awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of The Canby Current. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. As if a global pandemic, recession, historic wildfires, and the ordinary stressors of distance learning and homeschooling weren't enough for Canby students and parents to deal with, now there's this. At least 9 incidents of what is being increasingly referred to as Zoom bombing was documented at Canby School District during the first 4 days of live virtual instruction this year. Most have heard about it in the news, Canby High School Principal Greg Dinza said of Zoom bombing. A person gets a hold of a classroom Zoom link and poses as a legitimate student to get in. Once a part of the class, they take the opportunity to inappropriately say things, use profanity, or generally misbehave. Derived from the related term photobombing, it refers to the unwanted and unauthorized intrusion, typically by unknown persons, into a video conference call. Zoom bombing can happen on any video meeting platform, including Skype or WebEx. Of the 9 incidents that are known to have occurred in Canby virtual learning environments, they range from inappropriate comments to simply occasions in which the teacher thought a non-approved attendee might have been present, according to a district communications coordinator, Autumn Foster. Comments have mainly consisted of swearing and other offensive or disruptive language, Foster said. In almost all cases, when the intruder was discovered, they made statements before the teacher either directly removed them from the meeting or the meeting was ended altogether. There are a handful of investigations still pending, but in most cases, the district found intruders were attempting to join a meeting using a nondescript first and last name that they hoped would fool the staff member running the meeting. These same tactics are being seen by district officials throughout the Portland metro area and even in other states, as much of the nation experiments with some amount of distance learning this fall. Unfortunately, opportunists are taking advantage of our technology to disrupt our learning environments, said Foster. Similar intrusions have happened in neighboring districts, including Molalla River, Lake Oswego, and North Clackamas. Foster said the district is working with teachers to implement preventative measures and ward off further disruptions, including ensuring staff make time to review the roster of online meetings and questioning students in Zoom waiting rooms to make sure they are who they say they are. The district's technology team is also reevaluating security settings and may require additional authentication from attendees to prove they are a Canby student, such as passcodes or additional login information. At this time, Zoom is still the best product to meet the needs we have for online education, Foster said. We also know that other products are just as susceptible to attacks from those who wish to disrupt our environment. Evacuation orders for all of Clackamas County were lifted Tuesday morning, except for parts of the National Forest, a major step towards a return to normalcy after raging wildfires earlier this month forced thousands to flee their homes. The announcement came from the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office shortly after 10 a.m. that all evacuation areas have been eliminated and returned to normal throughout Clackamas County, except in parts of the U.S. National Forest. The U.S. National Forest is closed in the Clackamas River District, and there are partial closures to the Zigzag Ranger District. Containment estimates for the Riverside Fire, which has burned more than 138,000 acres in Clackamas County, was raised to 37% Tuesday. Containment is at 37%. Warm and dry conditions with less breezy winds were expected as a high pressure system remains over the fire area. The Wilhoit, Unger, Dowdy Road, and Graves Creek fires, which have collectively burned more than 2,584 acres, are now 97% contained. The Clackamas County Fire's Incident Management Team planned to transition the management of those fires to local units from the Oregon Department of Forestry local units by Tuesday. Smoldering, some creeping, and isolated smoking fire activity is expected within the fire perimeter, incident commanders said. Vegetation is drying out because of the warmer and drier conditions, but Riverside is not expected to spread thanks to the work of fire crews over the past couple of weeks, as well as the recent precipitation. Firefighters are focused on patrolling, monitoring, and mop-up along fire lines. Patrolling by firefighters is meant to address dangerous fire-weakened trees and vegetative debris smoldering near structures and fire lines. The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners on Wednesday called for a broad investigation into the causes of the large wildfires that have ravaged much of the state in recent weeks. "We are committed to working with our state and federal partners to address the root cause of these wildfires in order to protect our community and to honor our natural resources," commissioners said in a joint statement. "It is incumbent upon all levels of government to examine the causes of these mega fires and implement long-term solutions that will reduce the threat of wildfires." The largest conflagration in Clackamas County, the Riverside Fire, was determined to be human-caused, which does not necessarily mean deliberate arson. Human causes cover a broad range of activities, including cigarettes, campfires, charcoal stoves, cars parked in tall grass, and so on. In Clackamas County, we have seen the gamut. A three-alarm wildfire that broke out near Oregon City on Labor Day started when high winds brought down a power line. Two homes were destroyed by a fire on South Spangler Road near Canby a couple of days later when an RV towing a flaming Jeep pulled to the side of the road. Yes, you heard that right. That actually happened. The Jeep was believed to have been ignited by sparks from dragging chains. Despite persistent rumors on social media, some of which were repeated by law enforcement, no proof has been found confirming any of the fires in Clackamas County were the result of Antifa or other politically motivated arsonists. "Our top priority is protecting your safety and livelihood. We are supporting the firefighting efforts and making a path for your road to recovery," commissioners said in the statement. "We want to work with you to strengthen our community and learn how we can better support you for the next time disaster strikes." The Clackamas fires, including Riverside, as well as a smaller and mostly contained Wilhoit, Unger, Dowdy Road, and Graves Creek fires, destroyed an estimated 50 homes and another 150 structures. They also decimated hundreds of thousands of dollars in valuable timberland, including 450 acres of forest owned by Clackamas County, the value of which officials estimated this week was at more than $500,000. "These massive infernos engulfed our forest, devastated our communities, exposed us to hazardous smoke, evacuated thousands, and destroyed homes," commissioners said. There was, however, no loss of life to the historic wildfires in Clackamas County, which commissioners credited to the work of first responders, volunteers, and ordinary citizens. "We realize that the safety and care of yourself, family, and neighbors during this time was a community effort," commissioners said. "Thank you. Thank you for being quick to act, to follow evacuation orders, and for taking care of one another. Your actions demonstrate that we are all Clackamas strong. We are proud to serve you." The wildfires that have ravaged Clackamas County this month have made their mark. Combined, they have burned well over 140,000 acres, destroyed hundreds of homes and other structures, and displaced thousands of residents. And they also destroyed a piece of Malala history. The Oregon Pacific Railroad locomotive number 801, one of the first dedicated engines to work the branch of the railway, once known as the Malala Western, was lost to the horrific fire that engulfed the RSG Forest Products lumber mill near Malala the night of September 7th. The 801 was stored at a small OPR yard of the mill, which was where some of the heaviest burning was. According to Oregon Pacific Railroad, the locomotive was effectively burned and mostly destroyed in the large field and brush fires that surrounded the mill on both sides of Highway 213. OPR, an independent, family-owned short-line freight transporter known for its friendly attitude towards rail fans and the general public, did not learn of the fires threatening his property and the neighboring mill until late Labor Day evening. Oregon Public Railroad owner Richard Samuels saw the events unfolding on the 11 p.m. news and rushed to the scene, the company said. Fires were still raging in the area, including on RSG property. The 801 was parked in its normal spot on a small OPR yard just south of the mill across from the highway. Although the company said on September 8th that the locomotive did not appear to be economically rebuildable, it teased good news in a more recent update this week. The OPR is in the process of replacing it very soon, the line said in a Facebook post, and it's possible that this even may be rebuilt and converted in the future. The 801 was a 1951 800 horsepower EMD SW8 switch engine that the OPR purchased in 1993, shortly after taking over the Southern Pacific Malala branch. The engine remained on the Malala branch its entire service life and was an OPR workhorse powering runs between Cambie and Malala. In more recent years, it served as the primary switch engine for the RSG Forest Products and the Willamette Ag runs. It was repaired multiple times, most notably when the locomotive wore out in the late 90s and engineers told Samuels it was totaled, but contract-heavy diesel mechanic Jerry Van Loo managed to rebuild it. It was a crew favorite because of its large air compressor, which allowed it to air up trains much faster, and air throttle, which was easier to modulate than the notch throttle most newer locomotives have. Say what you will about the Cambie School District, but their YouTube game is straight fire. Faculty at Cambie High School proved that again this week with a spirited lip sync of Whitesnake's immortal rock ballad, Here I Go Again, to ring in the new year. We had this idea that we were getting ready for students to come back to school, said Cambie High School leadership advisor J.D. Bellum. We wanted to create something that would get students excited to come back to school and see their teachers, even if they couldn't do so in person. Participation wasn't mandatory, nor was it an official project of the school or faculty, just something the teachers wanted to do in their free time. Still, nearly 40 teachers and staff volunteered to lend their talents to the project, which included lip-syncing, air guitar, some serious headbanging, and even some fireworks. Several also performed with their kids, while one, athletic director Ben Weiniger, was rocking out in what appeared to be a child's play enclosure. We had an awesome time putting it together as a staff, Bellum said, and from watching the video, that much is obvious. He told each staff member to be creative and assigned them a 30-second segment of the song, but who can only sing just 30 seconds of Here I Go Again? Bellum ended up with almost a half hour of footage, which he needed to edit down to 5 or 6 minutes. He spent about 15 hours editing together the footage into a music video, which included intro segments and a slideshow at the end, you know, for the credits. Though Bellum had teased students for several days with GIFs he had created from clips of the video to create some hype, he explained, teachers waited until last week, the first full week back at school, before they shared it out to the student body. We got a lot of great feedback from the students, Bellum said. They love seeing the staff having a great time and being carefree. They also gave me song suggestions for our next video, which will definitely be coming in the future. To see the video, if you really think you could handle that much awesomeness, find this story on our website, canbefirst.com.
Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows,
no,
you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent, as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
My guests on the Canby Conversation today are Ashley Eddings and the legend James Brown. Hey guys.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
We're actually out here in Lyons, but there is a Canby connection. We'll get to it. Gosh, all the way out here. It's quite the drive. Roads were all open, fortunately. But you guys have a crazy story to tell, and we were just kind of laughing about where do we even start. But maybe start by telling us a little bit about how you guys, by the way, they're engaged.
Yes.
How you guys first met and what kind of brought you together.
Yeah, so James and I met online, mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah.
Which,
before this year, for all this crazy COVID stuff.
Yeah. Before all the crazy COVID stuff, we've been together coming up on 5 years.
Wow.
So just about 5 years ago, we met on a dating app, which I had an account for a while, but I think you had created yours,
Maybe weeks before, because a friend of mine talked me into it when he was down here visiting.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, not expecting anything.
Yeah.
So messaged him. Oh, no, I think he messaged me first.
Oh, sure.
You were quick on the uptake on that one.
He was a couple weeks in and ready to go.
Yeah, he was ready. So I think he messaged me first, and we decided to go out for dinner. Mm. So I picked Applebee's for some reason.
Great first date.
It wasn't great. And we actually went to the Applebee's on Lancaster here in Salem, which my uncle built back in the day.
Oh, wow.
So it was just, you know, that was the first thing on my mind.
It was destiny.
Yeah. So we meet up for dinner, and I was so nervous that instead of ordering dinner, I only ordered cake.
Oh, no.
Because I had no appetite.
Uh-huh.
So, James, I think you got like a chicken strips or something.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there with, like, my lava cake and ice cream. Like, I don't know what you were thinking, but...
You're saying, yeah, this is a one. This is a cheap date. No.
Yeah. It was, yeah. So I had my cake, and we had a great conversation. And
oh, that's so great.
Yeah, after dinner, we decided that we wanted to continue the date, so I think we walked...
We walked to Target, and she bought Frozen.
I did.
Okay.
That's how I knew he was the one. He let me buy
a big box of Twinkies, probably.
No. Yeah, that's right.
Some ho-hos.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just really casual. And,
that's so cute, guys.
It just developed over time. It was really, really nice.
Yeah, what were you thinking back then, James?
She was out of my league.
Yeah. So, so fast forward 5 years ago, you guys got engaged on Valentine's Day.
We did.
Went back to the same Applebee's. No, I'm just kidding.
No, James proposed here at our house, actually. I had a terrible day at work, and so I came home and...
On Valentine's Day.
On Valentine's Day, I was working. So it was a really stressful day. I came home. I think I went straight into bed.
Mm-hmm. Right around 8 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Romantic.
Yeah, so I was like almost half asleep when, you know, he proposed to me. But it was a really cute story. Do you want to tell the story? Instead of a ring, James gave me a rock that's in a heart shape, and I think you said you got it.
Probably when I was in either 6th or 7th grade.
Oh, cool. From a teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he got it from his
teacher.
Just
naturally in the shape of a heart?
No, so it's a glass rock that was either cut or formed that way, but...
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was from his teacher, and I think the teacher at the time gave this speech, you know, you only give your heart away one time. And that's how he proposed to me. He gave me his heart that day, and it was really nice. And my first words out of my mouth were, you know, between sobs, are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, are you serious? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was really sweet. Valentine's Day.
Looking back, like, you must think, oh, that's such a simpler time. So, like, let's just remind people, this was February 14th.
Pre-COVID.
Of 2020. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're so excited to plan our wedding. And
oh, yes.
To bring people out here, because you guys are, you're from here, Ashley.
Yes.
But you actually have family outside the state.
Mm-hmm.
And James, obviously, a lot of your family and friends are outside the state. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a much simpler time. Next day, I think, because Friday was the Valentine's Day. So I think on Saturday we went ring shopping.
Okay.
So I, you know, had...
Jump right into it. Yeah,
I had my big old eyes, you know, looking at all the rings. But James made me wait to tell people until the ring actually got sized and came back.
Okay, yeah.
So we actually told everybody about our engagement on my grandma's 88th birthday, because she's born on leap year day.
Okay,
so
cool.
She had a big party, and my family was there. And
February 29th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we broke the news to her family at the party, and then we broke the news to the people who live out here and the fire department guys, because we had an awards banquet that same day.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of at the end of the awards banquet, I made a big announcement in front of everyone. But prior to her party, I can't remember if we called my mom or your mom first.
We called my dad first.
Oh, okay.
My dad had the worst reaction.
Oh. Did he?
He did.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh,
thanks,
man.
Dad.
Yeah.
Give me the hype I'm looking for. Get on my level.
Yeah.
So,
I've had a similar experience to that of informing a family about a kid we're having. But anyway.
Right? You know, get on my level, family.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right in the end of February, we were still, like, you know, living high. And
right.
I think the first week of March is when we decided, you know, the venue was the big purchase.
Right.
You know, we find the venue,
lock it down,
and then we make all the smaller decisions,
yeah,
like, you know, decorations and all that jazz.
Yeah.
So,
were you guys always looking at an October wedding, or did that end up being part of the coronavirus stuff?
Yeah, that was actually James's decision.
Okay.
Because originally we wanted not to be engaged, you know, for too long.
Yeah.
He didn't want to wait a year.
Yeah.
And we really were not summer wedding folks.
Yeah.
So I really love the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween's my favorite holiday.
Cool.
And I'm born in the fall. He's born in kind of the winter-ish months.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have more of a draw towards this weather.
Yeah.
So originally we were actually looking for a venue for October 2nd,
mm-hmm,
because I'm a math nerd, so 10 times 2 is 20.
Yeah.
Then it was 10-10-2020, because who can't remember that?
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, dates like that were in our head.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we were going for the venues.
Yeah.
When we were looking around, we were asking specifically for those dates. Are
yeah.
you guys available? No. Okay.
Yeah, because some places are only summer, right? Or whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. So I think I scheduled maybe three venue tours before we actually went to go see a place. And the first place that we saw was Camp Cascade.
Yeah.
And we went up there and met the owner, and she was amazing, showed us the whole campus. Yeah. And James had already seen it, but that was the first time I saw it. Was around the first week of March, pre-COVID.
You guys both have some kind of family or history ties to that place as well, right?
Absolutely. James has a little bit more than I do.
So my uncle ran the camp for about 10 years as the camp director.
Yeah.
And then,
and this is a camp for kids, or it wasn't?
For churches? It's got two different things. So it's got the main camp cabin, and then it's got kind of a lodge retreat in the back that corporate events would do. But during the summer, they had a sports camp for, I want to say, like 14 weeks out of the year.
Basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a huge arena almost set up with, like, basketball hoops in every corner.
That's like a blast.
Yeah.
And your uncle ran that, you said.
Yeah, and I actually, I worked out there after my junior and after my senior year.
Okay, like, you a basketball player?
No.
No, okay.
Soccer.
No, I was, kind of the glorified title was camp ranger, but I was kind of the maintenance slash whatever else they wanted to put me on.
Right, yeah, yeah. Ranger. They just give him a cool title so he feels cool, and they make him clean the toilets or whatever.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
Did I nail it?
I had
to mention, not on the podcast, but the listeners know, but my wife and I also met working at a camp, so I do know a little bit, not this one, but how camps kind of operate. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And family, you know, running.
Yeah.
Even more.
Yeah.
So that's, you also went hiking and found.
So most of the people aren't going to know what this is. We call them North Fork Yos.
Uh-huh.
So they're rocks that are in the clay beds. And as far as we know, they're only found on the North Fork of the Santa Ana.
Okay. What are they called?
North Fork Yos.
Okay.
That's, I don't know what the actual name is.
Yeah.
Every time we try to find them online, you can sometimes find a blurb about them, like, you know, oh, what is this? And
interesting.
Yeah, so your uncle sent it to a buddy who worked for NASA.
Uh-huh.
And they couldn't find any information, is that?
Something, they basically weren't entirely sure how it was formed, because they weren't sure if something had gotten into the clay beds, and
yeah, it basically looks like a rock with, like, rings going up.
It essentially looks like it was turned on a potter's wheel.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so we still have a collection of those.
Some alien creature that lives out here, okay?
Probably aliens.
Yeah.
It's probably aliens.
It is 2020. It'll probably reveal itself.
That's, oh man, that's the next step. We flushed it out with the fire now. Great.
Yeah.
Locked
down
the doors.
You had a connection as well?
So funny story is my grandma used to live here in Lyons, and she's been a cook for her entire life.
Yeah.
She cooked at that camp.
Okay.
She worked there.
Yeah.
So I remember her growing up. She used to tell me stories of, she's such a rambunctious lady. So she used to tell me stories about, like, terrorizing.
Pranks.
Yeah,
right?
She pranks everybody.
Yeah.
So she would, like, she would prank the staff who worked there.
Uh-huh.
Like, she took her coworker's pantyhose and ran them up the flagpole one time. I mean, she would just do harmless things like that. And one day she told
me, I know she wouldn't have been at the time, but I'm just picturing like a little grandmother doing this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But you're probably right, spot on.
Yeah.
And then one time, the kids in the dining hall were too quiet. She just doesn't like quiet.
Yeah.
So she dressed up as something. She put, like, pantyhose over her face so no one could see who it was. And she ran through the dining hall, like, scaring all the campers. I mean, yeah, she was just...
Lots of pantyhose-related pranks.
Yeah, it was readily available.
That era. Yes.
Yeah, that was that era.
Yeah.
So she, But I remember her telling stories about that camp, and it was pre-me.
Yeah.
So, I mean... It's just a fun little tidbit of our family history. She was really excited when she found out that that was where we had gone to look for our wedding.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. Good memories.
So, found this place. COVID stuff is happening. What is that kind of like? Are you, like, shortening the size? Are you looking at moving the date? Or, you know, walk us through that a little bit. And then that'll bring us to the fire. So,
sure. Yeah. So, we booked Camp Cascade right away. That was okay. The first venue that we saw, yeah. And we booked it that day.
Yeah.
I arranged the contract.
Yeah.
And canceled all of our other venue appointments. That was literally the only place we went to go see. And it was about 2 weeks after we negotiated the contract that they announced a global pandemic.
Yeah.
So for the first few weeks, the information just wasn't there. There was a lot of conflicting, you know, yeah. This is how bad it is. No, this is how bad it is.
Right.
And
especially like how long it'll last, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Which you guys needed to know. The
initial reports were saying, oh, it'll be gone by summer with the heat, Oh, it's seasonal.
Yeah.
So we weren't like,
right.
Well, we were concerned, but not too concerned, because we had already looked at October.
Yeah.
James looks at me like with a quirk in my neck.
She was concerned.
I was concerned about getting sick, but not concerned about the wedding.
Yeah.
You know. Sure. So, we just kind of wrote it out for the first couple months. My mom actually had scheduled her flight to come out here to help me wedding dress shop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was about that time she had to cancel her flight because, you know, so I had to order my dress online and, you know, did that whole process by myself, but just tried to stay positive through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, so about June, July, they started reducing the restrictions because right at the beginning they said no parties, no gatherings, nothing, you're locked into your house.
Right.
And then they started to lift restrictions right about summertime.
Yeah.
The first reports that we heard were like crowds of 25 were allowed, and that made me a little nervous
because
I think we were looking at having about 50 people originally.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, watching the numbers fluctuate. And the camp director was really great about staying in contact with us, just what are the current numbers, what to expect. And as it got closer to our date, I think I went out there again about the end of August.
Okay.
I scheduled a second follow-up, to go out there with James and, just to meet with the director, see what the
latest numbers. Had they been doing weddings under these new guidelines or?
As far as I know, had a few.
Yeah.
They
had a little experience.
Very small.
Yeah, small. And then, like James mentioned, they were a sports camp. Well, they couldn't hold any sports camps, so weddings were really their only source of income at this point. So when we went out there, we discussed, you know, are you required to have masks on? We made a contingency plan. If guests showed up without masks, we were going to have them available. We went through the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And we thought it was going to be fine.
Yeah.
We were all set up to go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break and then we will come back to what you're about to tell us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so yeah, you've just done that kind of final visit. You were, you know, unlike March and when things were changing, we had more of a understanding of what COVID was, the guidelines and things we're going to look at, and you're now a few months away. And then, of course, you guys live out here in Lyons, and we know kind of what happened in terms of the fires. But why don't you tell us your experience with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and we haven't mentioned, James is actually, you mentioned the fire district, but James is a volunteer for the Lyons Fire District, which is obviously a big part of this, this story as well. So
huge part of the story. So we got the call on, I think it was the Monday after Labor Day weekend, right?
So, yeah, Labor Day, right?
Labor Day.
All started, September 8th.
Yeah.
Initially, we got called out to a fire that was in Mahama, between Mahama and Staten. And we were there for probably a couple hours at the beginning of the night. And when that scene was kind of wrapping up, we heard over the radio that Gates had a fire on Potato Hill.
Okay.
And prior to that call, most of my contact with her was, oh, you know, you're fine. You know, you can pack up some stuff if you want to.
Yeah.
But you're probably not going to have to evacuate.
Yeah.
I'm a worrier. I packed our whole house. He doesn't know that.
Yeah.
No. Well, I'm aware. I came home. It was like 3 or 3.5 days in when I finally actually came back to the house and I realized I didn't even have a toothbrush here anymore.
I grabbed everything.
She like bare walls.
I did.
But it went from...
Oh, man.
It went from, oh, you know, you'll be fine, we're fine, there's nothing to worry about, to we got to Gates, and we're sitting at the bottom of Potato Hill, and the entire hillside's on fire.
Yeah.
And I think that's right about when they escalated us to a level 3, because it was no warning at all.
Right. And you didn't know how big the fire was until you got there and saw it.
No.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and I think you said it was the biggest one you'd seen.
Oh, that's definitely the biggest one I've ever dealt with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, I started as a fire and rescue explorer about a week before I was 16, so since December of, I don't want to do the math, whenever I was 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's been in it for a while.
Yeah.
This is absolutely the one, the biggest one that I have heard of.
Yeah. So how did you get the call for level 3?
Yeah.
Did he call you or did you
no.
see it online or something?
No.
Oh, yeah.
So James was obviously busy with the fire.
Yeah.
And up until that point, I had thought everything was fine.
Right.
So I had gone to bed. Mm. And it's funny, my maid of honor texted me. And I just happened to wake up. I
didn't
usually...
know that was one of the duties. But
yeah. Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, life protection is fine. It's written in now.
Yeah, yeah.
He set a precedent.
Yeah, right.
So she texted me and she said, you know, let me know when you're safe.
Yeah.
You know, hugs and kisses kind of
right,
a thing,
right,
like
right.
she usually
yeah.
does. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, I heard Lyons is at a level 3.
Yeah.
You need to get up and get going.
Yeah.
So obviously I panicked,
yeah.
you know, because
yeah.
I'm a worrier. And I was like, I knew this was going to happen, James.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the first thing that I did was I grabbed the cats, threw them in their carriers,
uh-huh.
got the dog, put him in the car, and then I started loading up, you know, just all of our stuff that I had packed previously that
yeah.
day. Thank
yeah.
goodness that I
right.
did.
Yeah.
And I got out of town, and luckily my dad, he owns property down in Albany.
Okay.
So I
had a place to go.
Yeah. Had
yeah.
a place to go, had a place to chill. And, yeah, the first thing that I did when I got there was unpack the car.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that makes sense.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So I unpacked
well,
the car.
I mean,
and...
hindsight, but there was no reason to think at the time that the entire state was going to be on fire. Like
right.
It was, so, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I, you know,
yeah.
just was in a safe spot and
yeah.
decided to go to bed again after I checked in with James, I think. It's kind of blurry because
yeah.
I think I was in shock.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Sure.
But yeah, it was just an interesting experience that I hope to never have again.
Yeah. James, would you be able to share some of what those 3.5 straight days were, or just kind of what your experience was like of actually being on the front lines of these crazy fires?
Well, like, we weren't expecting how big this fire started out to be,
yeah.
let alone how big it got. But when we first got into gates, like, you could see the fire on the hillside. And when we finally got into the road, we were supposed to do structure protection then, because I was the engineer for our engine 5.6.
Uh-huh.
Basically, like, hey, there's a line back there for you guys. You just got to hook up, and you're protecting these houses back here. And I basically got the truck turned around and hooked up to the line and charged the line. And I'll censor myself a little bit, but the next thing I hear over the radio after about 30 seconds is, you guys need to get the F out of there right now.
Yeah.
And basically, just prior to that, the wind had shifted and all right. the embers were coming towards us.
Yeah.
And the yard was just catching on fire around us. You know, we hopped in the truck. I looked towards our exit. Our exit's on fire. So we basically drove through flames to get out. Went back to the Gates Fire Hall until we got orders for other stuff, because there were just fires left and right that yeah. we were chasing our tails for a few hours trying to do what we could.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I heard that Beachy Creek, which this one was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Went that night, because of the crazy winds, went from, I mean, it had been going for a while. It was like 500 acres, and that night went to 130,000. Like, oh, it yeah. won, like, that was yeah. the thing. Like, you know, you fire people, there were warnings and things about the wind and the dry conditions. People knew, but no one predicted, could have predicted that crazy level of escalation.
So, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we had no idea that it would. We were camping, like I said, that morning,
yeah.
you know, just totally relaxing weekend. Mm. And then to come to this, to yeah. end it out. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Obviously, the wedding venue, you know, comes back into it, was ended up being in the path of the fire. Sounds like some parts of it might have survived, but obviously in no state to host a wedding.
I checked the Camp Cascades Facebook page earlier today, and they still hadn't posted anything about it. The only real information I've got was, at this point, like, third hand. I talked to a Linn County deputy who mm-hmm. talked to a Marion County deputy
right.
who said there was maybe 5% of the structures on North Fork Road that were still standing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So it was pretty quickly after I had evacuated, I think, within a couple days, where James suggested, you know, hey, we should probably think about moving forward. It doesn't look like we're going to be contained anytime soon.
Yeah.
So I worked from home probably for that week. I went to my grandma's house and, mm-hmm. you know, I was talking to my grandma, who's very wise. The
right.
same rambunctious grandma.
Right, the panty.
Yes,
there.
My,
uh-huh.
my pantyhose grandma.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to her, just getting her life advice, and she said, you know, why not post something on your Facebook page, just letting people know about your situation? We'll see who's available, you know, get your message out.
Yeah.
And see kind of what you get.
About the wedding.
About the wedding.
Yeah.
Yes. So I posted on Facebook, I am such a nerd because I follow all these wedding pages,
uh-huh.
you know, I'm like the Budget Brides of
yeah,
Oregon and like
yeah,
all those
yeah,
little Facebook
yeah,
pages.
Yeah.
So I posted on those pages just saying, you know, here's my situation. Our venue sounds like we don't have it.
Yeah.
And they were going to provide everything. They
yeah.
were set to be our caterers. They were set
right.
to provide tables and chairs and linens and just everything that goes along with a wedding.
Yeah.
So I basically was starting over from scratch,
yeah.
and I was just severely overwhelmed
like
at that
3 weeks out. Yeah.
Yeah, 3
yeah.
weeks out. I
yeah.
posted it. It was exactly 20 days before our wedding
yeah.
is when this happened. And from that posting, I got such an outpouring
mm-hmm.
of people just really wanting to help out.
Yeah.
And some of these people, I mean, every single person who contacted me was a stranger.
Yeah.
And they were just, you know, how can we help? We have things to donate if you'd like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell us what you need and
yeah.
we'll get it to you, which I thought was just an amazing reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our current venue owner, Leslie, reached out to me and she said, you know, we've got this place.
Yeah. So let's, so Camby Connection, finally.
Yeah,
yeah,
Camby
so
Connection.
Leslie Wise, she's been on our podcast before, Lavender Owl Farm. I don't know if they have done weddings yet. You might be their first. I need to ask her.
Yeah.
But, because they are just getting started. Like, they, you know, great timing for them as well, started a wedding venue this year.
Yeah, so I don't know if we're the first.
Yeah.
She messaged me just recently saying that she had another rehearsal.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I know she's getting stuff up, but Leslie is an amazing woman. She reached out to me and
yeah.
basically said, we have this place, come look at it. If you love it, you know,
yeah.
we can work with you.
Yeah.
And so
she's got that great accent.
She
and,
is
yeah.
so fabulous. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And as soon as I heard her talk, I was like, yeah, you're the lady.
Yeah. Cool.
So I went up there, I think about 2 weeks ago now is when I first met her, and
yeah.
I went on a tour. I took my maid of honor. My mom was here at that time because she flew in from Tennessee.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw that place, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is where we want to be.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, total out of the blue because we had randomly picked a Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened to be available.
Yeah.
So it really all worked out. I can't even explain how well it worked out.
Yeah.
It was just an amazing, amazing outpouring of community support for us.
And either them or some of the other people that responded or kind of making it all happen in terms
yeah.
of all the other stuff you said, the catering and all that stuff as
oh,
well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So I had a lady just here in Salem. She
mm-hmm.
reached out. Her name is Jaylene.
Okay.
So Jaylene reached out to me and she said, I have a rental business
yeah.
that I can give you what you need for decorations.
Yeah.
Just come and shop in my garage and we'll just let you borrow what you need.
Yeah.
So I took my mom, we went out there and we got all of our linens, we
yeah.
have our napkins, all that jazz. Who else? I have a beautiful young girl here in Salem. She's creating us, it's a welcome window.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically a little picture frame that you put at the front of your wedding that says,
yeah.
welcome to our wedding.
Uh-huh.
She's creating that custom for us.
Yeah.
Just little things like that. And Leslie has been so great. She has a lot of connections.
Yeah.
That
right.
She's got our florist in line.
Mm.
And then our caterer, who I just signed a contract with yesterday, is up Magnolia Grill
mm-hmm.
in Mount Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And he had already been helping out the firefighters.
Yeah.
I found out the day before.
With food,
yeah.
yeah.
He had run
oh,
food out.
Oh, these firefighters.
These
Blind.
Firefighters,
okay, yeah.
yeah.
Cool.
So the day he contacted me.
So James had already tried the food and gave his approval.
Yeah, exactly. I texted James that day. I said, hey, the guy who brought you your lunch today wants to cater our wedding. So
cool.
It was just really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just all fell into place.
Wow. So when people are listening to this, it's actually your wedding day. It's October 1st, right?
October 1st.
Yeah.
Yeah, coming up.
Very cool. Gosh, I'm just so interested about what your vows are going to be, like, for better or worse, but, like, how can it get worse than this? It's just going to get better, hopefully.
I think 2020 has set, you know, a standard
yeah.
for the worst part of that.
Right.
It can only go
it's
up.
It's
got to
go uphill.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, James, you obviously, you know, have been dealing with fires, focusing on that, and then you're a volunteer, so also trying to figure out your job on top of that. Have you just kind of been, you know, letting Ashley handle all the wedding stuff and just kind of receiving the reports or whatnot? Or what's kind of been your, I mean, obviously it's something that's important to you too, but you have like these other like super pressing things, you know, right in your face, trying to set you on fire and stuff.
Yeah, for the most part, she's done most of the work.
Yeah.
I'll give her that one.
Yeah. You kind of feeling good about how things came together as well? I mean, one less thing to stress out about, I guess? Or
I mean, considering we had 3 weeks or less to get this all off the ground again,
yeah.
I think it went pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. He's been busy.
Yeah.
You know, granted.
Yeah. We had basically a dozen guys at our volunteer department all put in around 150 plus hours in 9 days.
Wow. Each.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's insane.
And these guys are taking time from their regular jobs to do this. So there's a question in if they're going to get reimbursed or not. And, you know, that's our biggest concern right now. Like, now that we've got our stuff secured and we've got our house, you know, thank goodness our neighborhood wasn't touched. It's like, okay, now what do we do about paying bills?
This was so insane to me. And just, like, words can't even express, like, you know, you guys, like, the volunteers that on top of just the job itself and the danger of it, but... you know, the livelihood, all of you, in some ways, you know, being personally affected by this, you know, families having to evacuate, maybe, and, you know, fortunately not for you guys, but maybe having your own property, you know, losing that or whatnot. It's just insane. Like, it's just like, how does this even happen? Like, so many things.
It's crazy. Yeah, I feel like we're really blessed in this situation. It could have been a lot worse. You know, there you can always say it could have been a lot worse, but really, it came close to being a lot worse. So
the irony for me is our neighbors across the street actually survived the campfire and then moved up here and had to evacuate for this fire. So I talked with them the other day and I just told them, I was like, I don't know if you're lucky or unlucky. And the daughter's like, yeah, I think some people are probably going to be like, I don't want to live near that anymore.
Don't move again. Like, stay put. That's funny. Well, I guess congratulations.
Thank you.
Made it. It's just the last thing that we can say. Thank you guys so much for taking time out to share this amazing story with us. Gosh, out of all the horribleness, it has a happy ending at least. I mean, that's got to be... how does it kind of feel? Like, I guess your last thoughts. How do you feel having survived?
Oh my gosh. Have you even had a chance to think?
I don't know, it's 2020 and we still have like 5 or 6 days left.
We're waiting for the season finale. No, I think I finally let it hit me within the last couple of days. We're right there. And it's like, we're getting married. Like, this is a cool time. You know, this is stories to tell the grandkids, you know, how many years from now. Like, guess what? Grandma and grandpa did right before their wedding. So, I mean, it in hindsight, you know, it could have been a lot worse, but I think that moving forward, that it's going to be a really positive experience and just something for us to grow off of.
Well, well, we will have you back. I can't wait to hear what kind of pranks your grandma pulls at the wedding.
she's game.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
the production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.